I'd like to call the committee, the Senate Committee on Higher Education, to order. We actually are starting like 3 minutes late, but we have two bills on the agenda, Senator Magnus and Senator Bach. And since they are not here at this time, we will. I'm sure they would be thrilled. We actually do have a presentation, though, that like to start and go ahead with. We have a presentation on the agricultural specials. I believe Bev Durgan and Alan Levine are here to help us out with that. Senator Magnus, we're going to go ahead with the presentation if you would wait, or do you want to go ahead right away?
I'm at your disposal.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator Magnus. I think they do tie together. The presentation and his bill do tie together. So I think we could go ahead with the presentation if you don't mind. Please join us at the table.
Unless we don't have a quorum.
Oh, please, Senator Magnus, join us at the table.
Slipped.
Please identify yourself for the tape. And
Madam Chair, Committee, my name is Bev Durgan. I am Dean of University of Minnesota Extension and Director of the Minnesota Agricultural Experiment Station. And I'll let my colleague introduce himself.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Alan Levine. I'm the Dean of the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences at the University.
Thank you both for being here.
And thank you. We would like to give a short presentation today to give you some background on the Ag State Special, a little bit about its budget and how it is used, and then also we'll end up with some examples of the importance of the Ag State Special to the University of Minnesota and how we utilize that to serve the state of Minnesota. There was a recent study that has just been released this weekend from CAST, which is the Council for Agricultural Science and Technology, that has summarized the economic impact of research of investing in agricultural research and extension. And some of the benefits that this study lists is that it benefits from consumers through lower food costs, producers for lower production costs, the economy through increased competitiveness, food safety and environmental quality, and also national security because of global food security. This article, this paper also talked about the importance of investment in not just faculty positions. We know that our faculty are the ones that conduct research and extension, but it also requires technicians, research assistants, which are graduate students, lab, greenhouses, and computers. And we know that that much of the research in agriculture and extension is conducted at the public land-grant universities. And we know that extension is an important part of this research because it extends this research and puts it into practice in the states. There's been a number of studies conducted over the years about the impact and the public return of investing in research and extension. And these studies, if you look at this particular article on CAST, we'll talk about there's a return of between 20% and 80% in the investment and a marginal return of about 50%. But basically, if you look at all of these studies, that a dollar invested in agricultural research contributes $32 to society and all of the benefits from this research. So what we'd like to talk about, as I said today, is about the Agricultural State Special. And the Agricultural State Special is a line item at the University of Minnesota through this committee, the Minnesota Higher Ed Bill. It's for money dedicated to research and extension at the University of Minnesota. The Ag State Special is very important to the colleges that receive this money because it pays the base salaries of our faculty that are on the campus here in the Twin Cities area and throughout the state. And it also then has the salaries of the experts who respond to the needs of Minnesota agriculture. It also provides the base funding for the funds for our animal and plant research facilities throughout the state. The Agricultural State Special is also very important because, as I mentioned, it pays our base salaries of our faculty, and this allows our faculty then the opportunity to apply for grants and other funding from federal, state, and private sources, so it really leverages the Ag State Special, and that multiplies the effect of the special. I think many of you know what the Ag State Special is used for, but just to a reminder is that one-third of the Ag State Special goes to University of Minnesota Extension, and it funds extension programs in five colleges and throughout the state, and two-thirds of the State Special goes to fund research in five colleges at the University of Minnesota. All of these colleges that receive the Ag State Special also receives funding from other sources. One is through the University of Minnesota through their O&M funding from the state that they also give additional money to the colleges that receive money from the Ag State Special. We also receive money from the federal government, competitive grants, gifts, and then also from county governments for support of local extension programs. This is the current funding and how the contributions of that funding to both Extension and to the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences, which I'm just going to call CFANS. If Dr. Levine wants to say the whole word, he can go ahead and do that. I'll stick to CFANS. So as you can see with the Extension funding, that the Ag State Special provides 24% of our funding, along with an additional 16% in other state funding from the University of Minnesota. For CFANS, it's 14% is the state special, and another 20% from other state funding from the university. This chart shows you the trend in funding for the Ag State Special. As you can see, the funding from 2002 up until 2012, and that 2012-13 column is based on the governor's proposed budget, so that we just looked at that. But as you can see, that there's been a trend downwards in Ag State Special funding, and now that Ag State Special funding, even last year, was less than it had been in 2002. The Ag State Special last year by the 2010 legislature was reduced by 12.7%. And as I mentioned, as you saw in the last slide, that the University of Minnesota did reduce the impact of that reduction by providing additional fundings through their O&M allocation to the colleges that received the state special. With that, that just gives you the background and kind of the funding of the Ag State Special is right now. And unless there's any questions that you would like me to answer, I will turn it over to my colleague, Dean Levine, to talk about how we use the special and the impact of the special in the state.
Any questions for Ms. Durgan from the committee? Please, Mr. Levine, go ahead.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Agricultural State Special makes certain that in the future we will have a secure and safe supply of food as well as feed and fiber and fuel. We all know the story of Norman Borlaug in Minnesota. He got all his degrees here. He got the Nobel Peace Prize. Note the Peace Prize, and that's because having a secure and safe source of food internationally creates peace. Some of the things that are happening in the Middle East are associated with the increasing price of foods and the difficulties associated with distribution of such food. Well, I'll give you a few examples of some of the kind of research that these dollars help us complete. Most people in this room, I'm sure all of you, know how important soybeans are to the economy of the state of Minnesota. And this is quite an interesting study or situation. The soybean aphids, which resulted in about $200 million of annual losses to Minnesota alone, took a hitchhike to get over here from Asia, probably on edamame, but some people think it was on buckthorn as well, an ornamental buckthorn perchance. By helping individuals and studying the way we deal with these aphids and the management of the soybean aphid, there's a potential to reduce the loss over a 15-year period by about $1.3 billion. This was in a study done at Michigan State, interestingly. We helped show how to better manage the economic thresholds and other research-based advice in terms of insecticide spraying and how to account for how much to use and how to save dollars in that way. Also, interestingly, we could do some through biocontrols. And I think that this is a particularly interesting story. Three of our scientists went over to China, and they had known from the literature that there was a stingless wasp that would deposit itself, the eggs, into the aphids. And over time, as the eggs turned into larvae, and then they needed nutrients, they would essentially get all their nutrients from the aphids, and that would kill the aphids. And in Asia, they didn't have problems with these. Well, we have a biosafety laboratory at the university at a level 2, also have one at level 3, in which these insects could be brought over here, this stingless wasp, and studied and then released. There was a permit to release one of these, and they did not establish themselves in the fields well enough to really control from a biocontrol. But we're continuing to do work with two other species of these stingless wasps to see whether or not this will work in the future as well. So these biocontrols could save a lot in terms of spraying dollars and environmental impact. Also, another important part of this is that we have done work with cold hardy grapes. People like to drink grape juice and wine. And we'd like to have cold hardy grapes. It's a very important part of our economy. And during this last period of time, we doubled from 2002 to 2007 the industry associated with wine. The economic impact was around $36 million in 2007. And most Minnesota wines are, in fact, made with four of our U of M developed cold hardy grapes. So this has potential for more growth and more development. But I should also mention with the cold hardy grapes, we're also studying other ways of extending our growing season through hoop houses and things of that sort, because in California, where the water issue is coming up, and other places, we may have to become an area where we grow more of the fruits and vegetables, but our season is so short, we need a way of developing and lengthening that season. The other thing we're deeply involved in at all levels is developing workforce and leaders. With Extension and our college, we have developed a whole series of leadership programs throughout the state. Some of you are probably familiar with the MARL program, the Minnesota Agriculture and Rural Leadership, the Red River Valley Emerging Leaders, the 4-H Youth Development, ULEAD, and of course, FFA Education and Leadership. These programs take people of all ages, varying ages, in different parts of their career, and really bring them forward to understand and to learn how to be future leaders in the area of agriculture, natural resource sciences, in those areas. We also have a great deal of student interest in these disciplines that we're involved in. Our college has 11 departments. We have a host of students, as you can see, that are seeking careers in the agricultural and natural resource sciences over time. Interestingly, the population dynamics have changed in the demographics. We used to, 20 years ago, you would see 65% of our students being young men, and now you see 65% of our students being young women. The majors are still continuing along the lines of agricultural sciences, with the most of our students going into the most students we have is in the area of animal science and also in nutrition as well. One thing that's important to realize, and we get asked by industry all of the time, that we need to develop more, the workforce needs to be developed, particularly in this area. And to give you an idea of how important this area is to the industry here and around the country, we surveyed a group of students in 2009 asking them when they graduated how well they did at finding work. Now, 83% of our students found a job within 6 months of graduating, and 76% of their jobs were related to the majors that they had taken while they were in college. The mean salary was $36,000. So clearly, this is a potential for a great many students in terms of the workforce in the area of agriculture, natural resource sciences, environmental issues, all of which are important to our industries as well as our population. The other thing that we're very deeply involved in, and particularly in the extension world, is in dealing with disasters. We know we're now readying ourselves for flooding across the state, particularly in certain areas. And Extension has a very, very extensive website associated with this, and the Extension workers also spend a great deal of time, our Extension faculty and educators spend a great deal of time answering questions and working with folks on this. So these are just a few of our examples of how the state special dollars really provide us the opportunity to do teaching research and applied research. And when I say teaching, I'm not only talking about students in our college, but also the public in terms of getting educated in those areas and doing research that will help develop the products that we need so much in this state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Why don't we then move on to Senator Magnus's bill, Senate File 698. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Magnus, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I am proposing Senate File 698. If someone would move the bill, and I would ask it to go for possible inclusion in your higher education bill.
Thank you. I believe Senator Zaxhug and Senator Sharon have moved the bill.
Thank you very much. Well, you've heard the presentation. Many of you have seen it before. Some of the new members, I think, was good to hear it. I would start out just saying the plain facts. In order for our state to be strong, we have to have a strong agriculture. It has to be part of it. If we're going to have a strong and vibrant state of Minnesota, it's imperative we have a strong and vibrant agriculture because we're the second largest employer in the state of Minnesota. Behind manufacturing, it's a key industry to our state. And I have blank in the bill, Madam Chair and members. I have blank numbers in there. That's up to you folks. What you decide to do for funding here, in yours. But the disturbing thing that we're seeing is that the funding for the ag special. And I know we're in tight budget problems, but the funding is seeing significant cuts, more so than many other areas, and that's the disturbing part to us. Madam Chair, I have another witness today. I would ask if Jerry Schoenfeld would come in and talk with us a little more about it. And Mr. Schoenfeld and I have been talking about the funding history. 2010, going into the year, we had $52,255,000, and now in the governor's proposal, we're at $42,873,000, about a 20% decrease in funding over that period of time. We had a significant hit in FY 2011 because of the unallotment. We lost about $7 million there. We're hoping that the members will look at the original funding back in 2010 and even farther back than that. Mr. Schoenfeld's got some additional numbers he could talk about if you want to join in, Jerry.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
Madam Chair, my name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I work with a number of commodity groups, including the Minnesota Soybean Growers and the Minnesota Pork Producers, both of which also use their checkoff funds in order to assist the ag special in providing funding to the University of Minnesota. And to give you some idea about what that might mean, there are many commodity groups out there. I think there are close to 20 commodity groups that exist. I'm not sure if they all contribute monies to the university, but I can tell you, for instance, with the Minnesota Soybean Growers, last year their budget was about $1.5 million that went towards the agricultural research at the university. And so this funding is very important to them because what it amounts to is kind of a leveraging situation in many cases. If the researchers are not at the university and the researchers are paid through the base funding of the Ag Special, if the researchers are not at the university, they are also not there and do not have the ability to request the grants from people like the commodity groups or the federal government or other kinds of places in order to secure additional funding for the university and for this what we consider a very important area. And I think maybe what would be best, and please do not take this as a slam towards one being better than the other, but to give you some comparison relative to the Ag Special, I think you might want to take a look at kind of how the university general operations and maintenance fund has been treated by the legislature over the years. And if we were to go back with the numbers that Senator Magnus has just described, in the year 2010, the Ag Special had a little over $52.25 million in it that was funded as an appropriation through this committee. After the appropriation cuts that were made through the unallotment, it was reduced to a little over $45 million. And with the governor's budget proposal, as was previously stated this year, it's at about $42,873,000. So that's about an 18% cut. Now, during that time, the university general operations and maintenance budget has also been cut back from what was projected for the university. However, to give you a comparison, in 2010, the general operation and maintenance budget was at a little over $550 million. The governor's recommendation for 2012, the same time period that I compared, is $543.5 million approximately. So the percentage cut there by the governor's recommendation is a little over 1%, I believe, in terms of those dollars. I don't mean to suggest that they weren't cut further than that in terms of what was the projected income to them. But the actual dollar comparison in that case is a little over 1% compared to about 18% in the Ag Special. Beyond that, question that I have got is, if you look back at other numbers, in 2009, as I said, they were about $550 million, 2010. If you were to go back to a comparative time, in the 1989 budget, it was $355 million for the general university operation maintenance budget. And in terms of the Ag Special, it was at about $42.8 million. So the proposed budget that is in the governor's proposed budget this year of $42,873,000 is equivalent approximately to where the Ag Special was in 1989. And that's our concern, that these trends have been going on for a while and that it is worsening. And so that's a great concern to us. We have several reasons that we're concerned. Certainly, you know, as a committee, that as you establish new base budgets for these, that goes into the future for years and years to come. So it's not just lost opportunity this year, but for years to come. Secondly, as I mentioned, this widening gap is of concern to us in terms of the prioritization that exists here. And thirdly, the Ag Special, as I mentioned, pays for the researchers who also multiply these funds through the request for grants from other entities, such as the kind of people that I represent. And so there's a concern there as well. So That pretty much is it in terms of just what we see as a widening gap between funding sources for this, what we consider a very important area.
Thank you. Excuse me. Questions or discussion from the committee? Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify, last year's budget, after unallotments and everything, was $52,250. Is that correct?
No.
Mr. Schoenfeld.
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Carlson, The after the unallotments last year, and I guess I should say something a little further about the unallotments. The unallotment that went into the Ag Special was at 12.7%. And so the numbers that I've got, at least I'm pretty sure accurate, are that the after last year's, it ended up at $45,610,000. I believe, though, that there was a provision in the federal stimulus law, and this is one of the things that I guess we'd like to point out to you. There was a provision in the federal stimulus law that restricted the amount of cuts that could go to the general operation and maintenance budget of the university. Because of that, the percentages that were taken out of the Ag Special were significantly larger than what happened with the general university fund. So if you were to this year, as an example, look at the same kind of cuts across the board, if you were, say, 10% or 15% cut, you're multiplying that on top of a cut that was already larger a year ago by significant numbers. And that's our concern. We typically in this institution look at base years and we say, okay, this base year. I guess what I'd encourage you to do is go back to look at the base in 2010, which would be a more accurate reflection of where things were at.
Further questions, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Magnus, I don't know if this is for you or for your witness, but this is all new language. And it seems to me a real lot of this stuff is probably already being done. Why is this all new language then? Is it being done? Will it be done by a new group, a different group than we've been doing it right now, or what, why do we need this new language in order to get all this stuff done? Because it seems like, you know, checking fertilizers and soil fertility research, soil, groundwater and surface water conservation practices. That seems like stuff we're probably already doing. So, what's the reason for all the new language?
Senator Magnus.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, you're exactly right. It is work that's being done now, and our language in the bill is broad-based. It supports the efforts currently going on at the university. It supports the needs of the commodity groups out there, and you're exactly right. For example, I'd point out line 2.12, work we're doing in conjunction with the Clean Water Legacy, also surface water, soil and groundwater conservation practices, and so on. We just had a hearing last week in the Ag Committee talking about this. Again, it's vital that we have these specialists working at the U to help carry out some of the work that we need done. And the Clean Water Legacy is one example. And that's one of the new efforts we're seeing as a result of the legacy bill. But typically, this is work that's being done, vegetable crop research and livestock research, Senator. So that's what we've been doing. So we just want to continue the work.
Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Maybe I'm not understanding the bill then, but we have an extension service at the University of Minnesota which does this kind of stuff. So is the U not doing this stuff, which is why this is new language, or are we not? I mean, what's the reason for the bill exactly? To make sure that the money that goes in from the special goes into this type of research specifically, as opposed to where it's going now?
Senator Magnus, just 1 minute. I think the Senate Council has something to add about the reason the language is in the bill the way it is.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, you're right. I mean, it shows up new because it's not in the law. If it was in an appropriation bill, it wouldn't be underlined. And they just want to direct the spending of this money. So that's the style of how the language looks when it's not in an appropriation bill. So there is nothing in the statutes that requires this specifically. They're just ensuring that that's how the money will be spent during the biennium.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator
Mr.
Pappas.
Mr. Fuller, was this rider language then?
Madam Chair,
Mr.
Senator
Fuller.
Pappas. It was rider language, yes, about two bienniums ago, 05 to 07. So sometimes they put it in and sometimes they haven't. But it doesn't mean there's been any change in activity. I think it's comfort language to some extent.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Senator Magnus, then I'm to assume this language has been discussed with the University of Minnesota and with the Extension Service people.
Senator Magnus.
It's been previously in.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, this is pretty much the same language that was in the previous bills. It's just a suggestion from the agricultural community on where to spend the ag special funding. So,
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Magnus, the only issue I would have is that putting in statute makes it fairly rigid as opposed to rider language. And what if a couple years down the road, the ag, we no longer have crop pest and animal disease to worry about? I just think you should think about whether you want it to be in statute or if you wouldn't rather just keep it in the rider language of the bill. And then I think we should really hear from the University of Minnesota about how they feel about putting this in statute.
I'm being advised by Senate Council that it is rider language. Mr. Fuller, did you want to add to
that? That's what he said.
Yeah, but so it's not.
This is putting in statute.
No, it's not. Mr. Fuller, maybe you want to explain what you...
Because
I'm obviously not doing
this is the language right job. Senator Pappas, that's associated. You see, there's no coding here, so it's just the way the language looks in a bill that's not an appropriation bill, that's riders. If it was in a once, if we put this in the spending bill, it would look different, and it would only be for the biennium. Am I making sense?
Madam Chair, just say it again. There's no statute indicated here, so this is rider language.
Senator.
That's correct. And I think before you got here, Senator Magnus said that if somebody made a motion, it would be for inclusion in the omnibus spending bill.
Yes.
Where this would be converted to rider language.
And gotcha. That is correct. The intention is to lay it over to put it in possible inclusion in that bill. Further discussion? We would entertain a motion to lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Senator Sharon makes that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. The motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Magnus.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and the members. I appreciate it.
Now we will move on to Senate File 342. Senator Bach, I thought I saw him come in. Okay. Thank you. Senator Bach, thank you. You don't need that, do you? I don't know how to move that. Oh, page is coming down. There we go. Senator Bach, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I bring to you a bill today for an additional appropriation to the Cook County Higher Ed Board. And just a little bit of background what that is if you think of a map of the state of Minnesota, Cook County is the tip of the state out into Lake Superior. A county of about, we'll see when the new census numbers come out, about 5,500 people live there. The biggest town is Grand Marais, and it is a long commute to any kind of a higher educational institution, about 125 miles one way. So there really is no higher educational opportunity for an area that's that isolated. So a number of years ago, in fact, I was a member back in the House, we created a higher educational opportunity in Cook County called the Cook County Higher Education Board. And we actually appropriated $80,000 of biennium to help run the Cook County Higher Education Project to provide educational programming opportunities via the internet for them to take coursework at other MNSCU campuses. It's worked out very, very, it's been a very, very successful program. Now, MNSCU has benefited by all of the tuition that it generates. People in Cook County have benefited from having an opportunity to take higher education courses from a remote location. So, Madam Chair, the bill requests some additional funding. There's funding in the base. I wanted the committee to understand the program. It's very easy. When we're looking at spreadsheets to wonder what this is, because it's a line item pass through that the legislature appropriates money to MNSCU that flows back to the Cook County Higher Ed Board. So I wanted the committee to understand that. I do have with me Doug Bruce, who is actually from the metropolitan area, who is a member of the Cook County Higher Ed Board, and he'd like to, I think, speak to the success of the program.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bruce, welcome to the committee.
Whenever thank you very ready. Much, Madam Chair, Senators. I'm not from Cook County. Jeffrey Michelle is my senator, and Pat Mazzarelle is my representative down here in Bloomington. So what's my tie to Cook County? Well, I've got a place up there and recently retired, and I've worked as a process improvement consultant, and when I retired from that business, took those skills and used those with St. Paul Technical College and Normandale Community College. So when the folks up in Cook County learned about that background, they said, well, that's a good fit for what we've got. Would you want to be on the board? And I said, well, maybe, yeah. Well, what are you about? And they said, well, our mission is to provide local access to college education and training on the North Shore. Our vision is to provide opportunities for higher education and training that result in living wage employment and an educated workforce to advance the vitality and economic sustainability of our community. Said, I can sign on for that. Now, why have you been successful? And these are the reasons I decided that, yeah, these folks have been successful and I would want to sign on. And that's why I think you should consider Senate File 342. And when you take a listen to, when you look at the results, I hope that you'll find yourself at ease in terms of supporting it. For example, Cook County Higher Education's completion rate for distance learning courses is over 90%. Now, to give you some sense for that, the national average is between 65 and 77%. We're doing something right. That's one of the reasons why I can come to you and very easily say we are the most cost-effective facilitator of distance learning in the state of Minnesota, period. Cook County provides access to all of the higher education institutions in Minnesota. We are not tied to a specific campus, and that is significant, so that we can bring the centers of excellence, be they in Winona, be they in Bemidji, be they on the range, be they Normandale or St. Paul or Century, we can bring those to Cook County. Another interesting thing about that is, because we are set up that way, when three people in Cook County take part in a class, it doesn't mean that Winona has to set up a new section for that class. We take those three people and we put them into that class. That increases the efficiency and the effectiveness of higher education because you don't have two small enrollment segments. And the students benefit from that because they have the opportunity of the interaction with more individuals than they would have if they were in small sections. So we are maximizing the effectiveness of the system that you've already put in place. Thirdly, we've generated over $100,000 worth of revenue from NSCU, and we don't get any of it. None of it stays with us. Our enrollment grew 35% last year. The lowest enrollment increase that we've ever had is 10%. So it ranges from 10 to 35%. We serve 20% of the people of Cook County. That's one out of five of you. Let's translate that information into metro talk. Well, if you've got 3.5 million people, say, in the metropolitan area, what's that, about 600,000 people? With one center. Normandale didn't have 600,000, St. Paul, a century. I'm not sure if all the campuses together have 600,000 folks in them. To give you a sense of the scale of the impact that that's having in Cook County and could have in other parts of rural Minnesota. Our budget is under $200,000. We support ourselves through grants, local donations, program fees. Residents of Cook County reached into their wallets and pulled out $25,000 for this. Cook County puts in $10,000. Now, this money is not mandated funds. They're doing it because they see a positive impact on the economic development that's taking place in the area. They went into their pockets and have done the same. We've been at it for about 14 years, but I'm the new kid on the block. They're effective, they're efficient, and this is, from my experience in higher education and working in the private sector, is a model that is a significant model. My own personal bias is that it's a national model, but that's me. But it is worthy of your support, and that's what I would ask for.
Questions from the committee, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you kind of paint a picture for us? I'm having a hard time. You've got a lot of residents in very sparse areas. Is it a building where they come in? Can you kind of paint that picture, how that works?
Good point.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes, it's really both. Those people that have access to high-speed internet from their home certainly can use that. But that is an issue within the area. So that, yes, we do have a facility, and that's what we're so and the answer is really both. Is that helpful?
If you could expound any of that, I mean,
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you have like a classroom setting. Big screen TV. I'm trying to get my head around how that looks.
Right. Well, I'm trying to get my head around all the technology changes that are taking place, too. But it is an old, it's a church that has been reconverted. It's got three or four classrooms in it, computer lab, meeting space. So we have workshops that are held there on site also. Those are the program fees that are generated. So we provide a lot of service also because people are, distance learning is something that I didn't grow up with, and I'm not sure if anybody else here has grown up with it either. So there is a learning curve that's associated with that. And I think that is one of the key things that has contributed to our 90% success rate. There is a high degree of orientation and hands-on so that people get to know how to use this. Because if you're at the end of the Gunflint Trail, hanging out there by yourself, and you're dealing with a biology course for a nursing program, it gets kind of lonely, you know? So how do we make that happen? And that's one of the things that I think has contributed to our high success rate.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Bach and Mr. Bruce, for the presentation. I think sounds like you have a very effective and efficient program, and it's you work collaboratively with the other Minsku campuses, so thank you for that. Quick question is, what was the appropriation in the current biennium? Does anyone know, or does fiscal know?
Ms. Weidman,
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, they're currently getting $120,000 a year, so this would be $40,000 in addition to that.
In addition to that.
Yep.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Council, isn't it $120,000 for the biennium?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, the information I have from Minsku is they're getting $120,000 a year.
Well, I hope they
Senator
are.
Bach.
I hope they are, Madam Chair, because I believe it's $120,000 for a biennium, but I guess we could check. But
so, just a follow-up.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this $40,000 is in addition to the $120,000 per year per biennium, whatever it is.
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Madam Chair, the reason I really wanted to bring this is anytime you have these line item appropriations on a spreadsheet, people ask the question, well, gee, what is that? And actually what happened to us 2 years ago was when the governor was going through the higher ed bill, he actually, this appropriation is split. Originally it was $80,000, then $40,000 was added years later, and somehow on the spreadsheet it was split, and the governor actually vetoed a piece of this funding. And later then when he learned what it was, made a decision to support reinstating it. So When it's just a line on a spreadsheet, I think it's a little hard to understand. Wanted the committee to be aware of this program. We've got so many new members there, but it's a pretty unique way to provide access to higher education from rural, remote areas.
Senator Tomasoni, I think we would be moving it for possible inclusion. So Senator Tomasoni moves that Senate File 342 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus higher ed bill. Is that what you move? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. Thank you, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
And Mr. Bruce, thank you. That is all we do have on the agenda for today. But I just wanted to, we are not meeting Wednesday. And I do have several meetings set up as we're going through with individuals about the budget bill. And then Monday we'll meet on Monday, a week from today. We'll have several bills up. And possibly late Monday or maybe Tuesday, we will have a draft of the budget bill. And then so Wednesday next, what's the date on that? I don't even. The 23rd, we would be dealing with the budget bill in committee, and we would be meeting in the afternoon, and if we needed to, into the evening on Wednesday evening, so that hopefully we could finish her up that day. But so that's kind of the layout for the next week, just so that everybody has an idea. And Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that date, then, will you be taking testimony then?
Yes, we can if there are folks who are interested, yes. Any other questions on that? Then, if there is no other business and people understand they plan for the next week, then we will adjourn. We are adjourned.
Does it take 2 days to get me in? Like,